Well, a warm welcome to the Orient Hour, as we haven't got our theme tune ready at the moment, so we won't be having that. It's a great start, isn't it? And welcome to tonight's show, everybody. And on tonight's show, we have Barry Galvin. Good evening, Barry. You can do that if you want. Good evening to you.
Thank you. Yeah, well, we've got this on. Yeah, good evening, Andy. How are you? I'm flustered, a bit flustered, but you're all right, yeah?
Yeah, you carry on. And also joining us, Adrian Whitbread. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good. Just trying to work out this microphone at the moment. I'm having a fight with it.
You're having a fight with the microphone.
And the mic's winning, Adrian.
Aha. And joining us, hopefully, on the line, hopefully, is Dave Victor. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Andy. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. And a nice start to the show there. We've walked in. We've got our camera's not working. We've got other things not working. And, yeah, never mind, eh? But we're all in one piece, and we're here in this drizzle. And anyway, Dave, how's your week been, mate?
Well, it's been an unusual one. I mean, obviously, there wasn't football at the weekend, and just trying to get some sort of sense, some sort of logic to all the strange and inconsistencies that seem to be happening, not just in terms of football, of course.
No, it's been all over the shop, hasn't it? Now, you were at a non-league match, weren't you, last night?
I popped into one very quickly, but
I was going to say you were spotted. Yeah,
I was spotted. Yes, but that was more to do with I only popped in for half time. Just that's about sort of George Petke and his foundation and the Fenford clubs, I think, which are a very interesting sort of sporting development in the area. But I think it was interesting. I mean, sports played at various levels, and you can go in at some levels and attend games, and at others you can't, of course. There's all sorts of difficulties at the moment. So one of the things I'm interested in at the moment is just popping in to see how many people are going in to see non-games. I think there were over 100 at Fenford. And I think that shows an appetite. I've also been to in at Peckham. Again, I didn't see the whole game, but it's just interesting to see, you know, about 200 there. And I think there is an appetite for football. And although there was all these problems with the National League, which has only just been resolved, we understand, there's all sorts of strange anomalies. I tweeted today about Wealdstone. Now, Wealdstone have got a game on Saturday. I'm not sure who they're playing, but it's a game that you can watch in the clubhouse on the stream, but you're not allowed to look out the windows of the clubhouse, and you're definitely not allowed to go outside there. It is absolutely crazy at the moment. I've been trying to get some ideas to what happens with all these tests. We understand Phil Wallace, the manager of Stevenage, he's asking for some confirmation and some clarity, because Stevenage had at least one player that was tested positive just before the Black City event. That one went ahead. Grimsby Town had a player that also tested positive. Their game at Cheltenham, our visitors on Saturday, game's just been confirmed, I understand. Now, they had a player tested positive. Their game at Cheltenham was postponed. Their next two games against Bradford City and Hull City next week have been postponed. We know that West Ham United, their manager and one of their players, tested positive. Their game against Hull City, who didn't have tests, it's so confusing, isn't it, Andy? I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Yeah, Dave, just going back to the Wealdstone one, you said, did I hear you right? They're allowed to watch it indoors but not look outside, when it's been proven that obviously the contamination is far more likely indoors, and they're not allowed to come outside and watch it. That just seems counterintuitive to me.
It is crazy. So they're streaming the game and they're showing the game in the clubhouse. So I'd imagine it's restricted as to how many people can go into the clubhouse. But the windows will be shut. It probably would be safer if you could open the windows.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
At the empty ground. But there is just no logic at the moment as to what the guidance is. And I think that's the frustration. And I think that's sort of a real problem, not just in terms of football, but across the board. What we want is consistency, a clear message, and a logical message.
Yeah, there's none at the moment, that's for sure. I mean, that goes for all walks, doesn't it? Not just football. But, yeah, that's strange, isn't it?
So, Dave, your take on all these rules. I mean, it is the contradiction, isn't it, that everything is one rule for one rule for another. We've seen non-league matches where you can have spectators for one team and not for the other in the cup ties. I mean, it's ludicrous, isn't it?
It doesn't make sense. And it's also in terms of the symptoms. I think what was demonstrated by the recent test that Leighton Orient have been involved is that you get these, some people can be very fit, but they will be tested and they will test positive and they'll be showing no symptoms at all. Others, you think, gosh, you don't look very well at all, and you have the test and the test comes back, results negative. It's one of the real problems with COVID-19, and one of the difficulties that the government and everybody faces in trying to tackle it. My understanding is the only symptom that is consistent with the virus is if you lose your sense of taste or your sense of smell, then that really is a warning. But in terms of temperatures, people often have temperatures that go up and down. In terms of coughing, again, people can often have coughs. And of course, sickness in itself, you know, being physically sick, is not in itself a sign of COVID. So it is confusing, and you can see why people are making the wrong decision as to whether they should get a test or if they shouldn't get a test. I think also what's being demonstrated recently is, you know, that people, particularly young people, and I'm of an age now where even Joby McEnough is young to me, you know, if you're fit, young and healthy, the chances are that COVID will not affect your life, even if you test positive. It is people in their later years and with lower immune systems, probably for because of pre-existing medical conditions, that are more vulnerable. I mean, this is a worrying time, a confusing time, and a time when we need a clear message.
It is indeed. Now, Adrian's here, and your take on it, Adrian.
Oh, dear me. I think you've just covered it all in the space of 5 minutes. I think it's so difficult. I think, you know, looking back to when it all started and where it's, you know, come into, that, dare I say, common sense has to be involved. And unfortunately, some of the times, you know, people do need to be guided. But, you know, I've had it recently myself when visiting petrol stations, the amount of people that come in without wearing a mask, and you say to them, have you got a mask on? And I had it this evening, and someone came back with an answer straight away, and I didn't have an answer back to it. And it feels like then you're becoming confrontational. But if everyone just follows what the guidance has been given, so to speak, then we'll get to the bottom of it a lot more quicker than if people don't use their common sense, as far as I'm concerned.
And how has it affected you and your football career? What you're doing at the moment, Adrian, has it affected you?
Well, most definitely, you know, because there is no football, so to speak, you know, predominantly at the lower level, apart from obviously it's meant to be starting this weekend. You know, unfortunately, the industry that we're in, you're looking for teams not to start so well, but, and then an opportunity to come about. But, you know, I've over the last probably 18 months, subject to stuff that's gone on with myself, you know, regards to work, I'm ready to work. I want to work. But, you know, I'm putting things in the pipeline now whereby that eventually, if something does come up, I can get back into the industry that I love and football, especially here in England, and be given the chance as a head coach. But on the flip side of it, I'm actually now developing not an academy, but an elite clinics for players between the age of 11 and 16 years of age. And I'm in the middle of forming a partnership with a company called Campione Soccer Academy that are based in Essex. That's actually, you know, some good of it from my end has come out in the last 6 months, you know, being in lockdown and then opening up to do one-on-one training, etc., etc. So, you know, that's been good from that angle for me, and it's probably pushed me into doing it a little bit quicker. But again, with COVID, you know, you have to be very careful as to what you can do, where you can do it. And
I mean, it's affected all industries, isn't it? But particularly ones where close contact, isn't it? You know, I mean, when you're playing football, you have to have that close contact, don't you? You know, unless you're training individually, but as you can do, but it does affect you, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. I mean, I've also, you know, been very fortunate. I've been asked to coach an under 14 boys team, and again, when it first got, we came out of lockdown to be allowed to obviously take some training. You know, I was like, are we able to do this? What's the guidance? And it was only through my contact Hayley Smith at Cambione that she gave me the guidance as to what it was like and how we were to meant to move forward with it. And on the flip side of it, with what I'm doing, you know, I've spoken to a school and they're saying that they've got no football teams playing because of it. And yet they're outside, and yet you've got Sunday teams that are playing now, but yeah, no school teams in certain schools. And that's my old secondary school. That I'm trying to form a relationship with them as well. So
where's that, Adrian?
That's in Epping, St John's School. It's my secondary school from many, many moon ago.
They still remember you?
Well, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I take it you were in the school team.
Well, I was.
And, I'd like to think.
Yeah, I mean, I've been speaking to a guy that obviously I got put in contact with through one of my friends, dare I say it, from one of my old teams that... I'm not sure whether I should say the name, but it was West Ham, you know.
No, you shouldn't say that.
Yeah, well, Heather Smith's put me in contact with this guy, and her daughter actually plays for Arsenal Academy, and I was doing some extra sessions with her and helping her. And she was the one who said, well, why don't you look to going into St John's School? You were there as a pupil. And Adam Smith, who's a PE teacher there, is you know, wants me to come in. He said, but, you know, I literally spoke to him last night and then again this morning. And he said, at the moment, I can't do any football groups and I'm willing to give my time for nothing, you know. And, you know, in a way, you know, ex-pupil done good, so to speak. And it's early stages, but we're not far away from going live with that. But it's just the time thing, you know.
So, I mean, things were progressing, weren't they? And we were talking about having... crowds back in the limited capacities in stadiums, and then this last couple of weeks with the increased restrictions, obviously that's put things back again, isn't it? As you're alluding to now, which is, it's frustrating for everybody, isn't it? You know, I run a business, and you know, you sort of one step forward, two steps back at the moment, isn't it? It's the same in all walks, I suppose.
Dave, you're sitting there very patiently listening in, and these academies are cropping up, but people like Adrian don't grow on trees, do they? Somebody with international experience of coaching, and it's a great opportunity for young people, isn't it?
And it is important. And I know it's, you know, this is a silly thing to say, but you're only young once, and I really do worry about the impact on all this, both in terms of the physical well-being, but also the emotional well-being of a generation of youngsters who must be so confused at the moment. I know many that are trying to enjoy their first term at university at the moment, and others, you know, were thinking, if they're not at university, what would you do? There's real problems in terms of employment. You can't even travel as a youngster at the moment. It's so important that youngsters stay fit. It's not just about COVID, it is about a health policy, and we need to keep our youngsters as fit as possible.
Do you know what it is, Dave? It's just that I've just seen from my own angle, from when I was a young boy growing up, and obviously was very fortunate to be given the chance as a schoolboy at Leighton Orient at 12 years of age. I think these children go into academies with professional teams, and they get a very shortened period of a chance to prove themselves, and then they get let go, released, you know, from as early an age as 11, you know, which I'm looking at from 11 to 16 year old girls and boys. And I almost feel that they go with their school team, their Sunday team, they play the games, they train once a week, they get involved within a team environment, which is great because they're with their friends, but there isn't enough done for them individually. And that's where I'm coming in from. That's the niche that I'm looking at, is that I don't want big groups. It's not an academy that I'm looking to run myself. You know, it's individual work where a player wants to come along. Yes, of course, to enjoy it, but also to work on their game, to give them the chance to get back into the game and go and prove those people wrong that have let them go. Because we all know that everyone progresses at a different age, a different rate. And I just feel that I've seen so many pitches local to me out in Essex where I'm like, I used to play there. There's no games going on. There's nothing going on. There's not the training. It's all done within a team aspect. And I just feel that I can strip it all the way back from, you know, something as simple as passing technique, and of course, exactly what you said, from a mental side and an emotional side as well.
You were saying earlier with one of your agents, sorry Dave, you were saying that you felt that the guys don't practice enough on their own anymore, because, you know, we're the same age. We used to go out and kick a ball up the wall and just play with your mate or play on yourself, didn't you? But you say it's all structured around teams now, and that's not necessarily a healthy thing. You think individual training, practice can help their development, yeah?
Well, that's the idea of putting it together, because if you're going to come, you're coming to train. You're not coming along, no disrespect, just with your mates to have a kick around. And exactly what you said, the trouble is, I do know there is a lot of distractions nowadays, but you know, I used to pick the ball up myself, and when I used to go and visit my grandparents down in Reading, there was an old...
Take a ball with it.
Yeah, take a ball with me. Sure. There was an old bunker from the war that was situated up the park, and you couldn't keep me away from kicking the ball against the wall. And I was telling the kids that I was coaching, the under-14 group, and I said, well, watch this. I said, if you hit this ball against the wall, what's it going to do? Oh, it's going to come back. I said, well, you haven't got to go and fetch it. You can practice side foot passing. You can then make the distance bigger.
Controlling the ball from different angles.
You know, and you know where they train. You know, we made the excuse of, oh well, the pitch isn't very good and whatever. And I was like, but you've got to understand, is these Brazilian players that play where they play, obviously in Brazil, and they play on the beaches. The surface isn't great, and I've seen that firsthand. You know, in North America, down in Puerto Rico. They didn't know how to, no disrespect, didn't know how to, you know, maintain a football pitch. And so it's naturally going to improve you. And that's where I'm coming from, that I feel that I want to give that back a little bit. And I think I can see a purpose to it.
Yeah.
Just switching subjects, Dave, good news in the last hour or so that Saturday's match will go ahead.
I think it is good news. It's going to be an interesting game as well against a Cheltenham side whose game was also postponed, as we said earlier, because of Grimsby Town's difficulties regarding the virus. Before that enforced break, Cheltenham, who really suffered heartache in the playoffs against Northampton, having sort of established a comprehensive lead, it would seem, a two-goal advantage away from home. They lost 3-0, and that took something to come back from. They beat Tranmere Rovers by 3-0. Now, that is impressive. Leighton Orient, of course, still unbeaten, both in the league and in the League Cup. You know, they had a bit of momentum. There is a lot of resilience in this squad. It's going to be a fascinating encounter. I am so pleased it's going ahead.
Well, it is. And, of course, fans can stream that. Go to the club website. It's £10 or £7 for an international pass. It's included, of course, for season ticket holders. Wimbledon, the next match up, £10 or £7 for international. That's not included for season ticket holders. So you will need to buy an individual match ticket for that. And Dave will be there ready to commentate his way through that match. Now, how rusty do you think the people will be, Dave? Because obviously Ross won't have had a lot of time with the players together, will he?
No, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, the squad does feel as if it's together, and that you just hope that they're able to maintain the momentum that they built up after a very impressive start to the season. I think that's why it's so important that Leighton Orient are able to get back onto the pitch as quickly as possible. Can I also say, Andy, that I think the communication once again with the club has been excellent. Nigel Travis, the way in which he's described and explained the issues, not just in terms of Leighton Orient, but all the difficulties that the testing has, all the dilemmas. You know, we've learnt that Brentford and Hull chose not to have the test, and of course Leighton Orient, it was a voluntary thing that they did, and it is going to be fascinating. Tottenham, understood, progressed in the League Cup last night by penalties over Chelsea, and I think it might have been Matt Roper in the Pandemonium that was suggesting if Spurs go forward and do win the League Cup, they won't be the only side that will be unbeaten this season in the competition. What a crazy year it has been already.
It has. And talking of unbeaten, well, it's a side that isn't really unbeaten. It's a bit beaten. Stoke Gabriel in the South West Peninsula League, step six. I've got to give you this, Dave, for a football team. Played six, lost six, 4-0, and against 78, and they dismissed their manager last week. That's got to be, that's incredible.
I, I played for a Sunday morning team that had a very similar record to me personally, understanding, you know, that you've just got to give your hats up to those players that go out to take a beating like that.
There is a bonus to this, that in the last match they lost 13-0, and guess who was their player of the match and won them the award?
The goalkeeper.
Should
have been 25.
Yeah, I mean, thanks to Joe Daniel for spotting that one.
That sounds like how I was spotted. You know the story about how I got to Latin Orient, don't you?
No, go on, enlighten us all.
Okay, so when we used to play for my recreational district team, we went and played a Latin Orient team, under 12, under 13 team. We got beat 13-0. Wow. So what position do I play?
Centre-half.
We got beat 13-0. Somewhere out of that, exactly what I'm saying.
Jimmy, 12 offsides and a breakaway, though.
Jimmy Allibone, God bless him, yeah. He was the one that saw me, and then I came in to train at the Kelmscott Centre down in Walthamstow, and that's how it all started for me.
Well, I suppose you saw a lot of the ball at centre back
in the back of the net, yeah.
Well, it's reached that point of the evening where we're going to say thanks, Dave, for joining us, albeit briefly. Paul Ward will be coming along shortly, so enjoy the match on Saturday. We'll be tuning in to listen to you, and let's hope for 3 points, Dave.
Absolutely. It's good to hear from everybody, and best wishes to Adrian. It's great to hear you, and hope you're well, Adrian.
Really appreciate it, Dave. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Well, that was Dave Victor, and as I say, we've got Paul Ward, who older fans will remember playing for the club, had a good career until it was brought to an untimely end in the mid-90s with a bad injury, and he's assistant manager at Staveley. And, of course, the sort of thing we'll be talking to Paul about will be the effects of the COVID on the non-league, really, and a talk of the devil. I hopefully got Paul Ward on the end of the line now. Good evening, Paul.
Yeah, good evening.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How's yourself?
Yeah, we're all sitting here. I've got Adrian Whitbread sitting opposite me, and to my right, Barry Galvin, the club's PA announcer. And were you at the club at the same time as Adrian, or was Adrian a little bit after?
No, Adrian was there. Adrian was coming through and on the fringes of the first team. I think I'm not 100% sure whether he appeared in the promotion year. He may have done.
How are you, Ward? Are you okay?
I'm good, Eddie. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, no, Paul was obviously in the team that won promotion when I was still an apprentice. I think it was the following year that I turned pro.
Yeah, I mean, you featured in the team the following year. I know that.
That's it, yeah. I always remember Wardy. He was a good player. Nice left foot.
Yeah, a bit of a character. I used to call you Wing Commander, Paul, because you used to have that moustache and you used to always wear a blazer and come in very smart. You know, you always... I used to say, there's a Wing Commander's coming to the... Yeah, always well turned out, though. Let's have a brief look. Before we get on to the current problems surrounding football, Paul, let's look back briefly at your career, which actually did take in over 300 Football League appearances at various clubs. And you started out in the capital with Chelsea.
Yeah, obviously I was there as a schoolboy apprentice and had 1 year as a pro there. Later on in years, that obviously helped my transition moving into the Orient dressing room with a lot of familiar faces, the likes of Kevin Hales, John Sitton, Terry Howard. I'm sure Eddie will tell you, it's always nice to walk into a dressing room and see a few faces you know. It does help you settle in. But I never featured in the first team there. I was a regular in the football combination side as a second-year apprentice, first-year pro. But the management, again, you know, I've been listening to the show and, you know, I listened to Eddie's story about the time he got picked up with a heavy defeat. But, you know, the reality is somebody sees something within you and you get an opportunity in football. And it is about being lucky. It is about being at the right place at the right time. And the management team at Chelsea at the time were Jeff Hurst and Bobby Gould, who were very pro-youth and, you know, the future was bright. But unfortunately, just before I signed the contract that they'd offered, which was going to be a three-year deal, they were bulleted. They were sacked. John Neil and Ian McNeil came in, who had a very different view with regards to where they wanted to take the club and were very senior pro-orientated. And one of the first things he did with three of us who had pro contracts on offer was renege on those deals, offer us 12-month deals, and then send us out on loan. So I ended up going out to New Zealand for 6 months. And when I came back from there, they'd signed a few players of seniority, and obviously it looked as though the future wasn't going to be great at Chelsea. And you ask that question. If you know, if you can get yourself sorted out, would you be prepared to let me go? And when the answer is yes, that pretty much tells you everything.
But it was a good break for you, Paul, because, I mean, Middlesbrough is not a small club, is it? So that wasn't a bad one to go to.
No, it wasn't. And, I mean, they were one of the clubs that, you know, prior to me going to Chelsea as a kid, you know, they were one of the ones, I think, up back at home, Sunderland and Middlesbrough had shown an interest in me signing. But, you know, I'd always liked the adventure of getting away from home and starting to mix with peers who were in the same environment, which I thought would make me stronger as a character and probably give me a better chance at actually doing something. But yeah, going back to Middlesbrough again, played in a trial game in front of Bobby Murdoch, the manager at the time. You know, and again, that game could have gone anywhere, but fortunately for me, I mean, I was a striker at the time, believe it or not. And fortunately for me, in the trial game, we won 2-0, scored one, made one, and then within 14 days, I'm making my league debut up at St James's Park against Newcastle with Keegan the lot playing. And, you know, how times could have been so different had I gone in that trial game and had a nightmare.
Well, that's a debut and a half match, isn't it?
Yeah, just a bit, yeah. Fortunately, we didn't win the game, we drew 1-1. I think Mick Shannon had been, you know, he was on loan at Newcastle, and he scored for Newcastle, and then Darren Wood equalised for us, who ended up at Chelsea after his Middlesbrough days. We come out of it 1-1. I think Tony Mowbray made his debut in the same game. And then obviously that was the start of it.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, you've got 76 appearances or so for Middlesbrough in a 3-year period, and then really the bulk part of your career, over 100 to 124, 125 games at Darlington. So and in there, of course, you became a bit of a record holder as the youngest player manager in the Football League, didn't you, at one point?
Yeah, I mean, the move to from Middlesbrough to Darlington, I suppose, wasn't an uncommon thing at the time. Cyril Knowles, who was Malcolm Allison's assistant at Middlesbrough, had gone across to Darlington to become the manager. And Darlington almost became a Middlesbrough, you know, Middlesbrough reserves, really. And so, again, when myself and Alan Roberts went over to Middlesbrough, we were walking into about 7-8 familiar faces. And, you know, I had three years there, and as you rightly said, probably a year and a half into that. I mean, the first season we were there, we were adjusting to life in the old third division at the time. It was prior to Premier League, so it was the old third division, and we were adjusting to life there, found it difficult, and I think I've gone on record as saying, I think that the first nine games after I'd joined Darlington, we didn't even pick a point up, we'd lost. And you're thinking, you know, what have you joined here? but then something around about Christmas clicked, and we lost. We went on a run of about one defeat in 21, finished mid-table, and comfortable at it. You know, took some big scalps that year, beating the likes of Derby County and people like that. The following season was a very, very much a mirror image of that, where we struggled early season. And around about the Christmas time, we never really reacted in the same way as the previous season. And struggling in the bottom end of the division, the bottom two, bottom three, and unfortunately Cyril was sacked. They'd offered the job to Frank Spraggan, and he'd accepted. So he'd, I think, accepted on the Saturday evening after we'd been beat at home to Carlisle. And Monday morning came, Cyril and John came to work and were duly bulleted. After the chairman had pulled the trigger, Frank had contacted him to say he changed his mind. So that left the club without a manager, and myself as captain, and a lad called Peter Robinson, who was the senior player, we were asked to take training that day, but within 5 minutes of being up at the training ground, the club secretary Brian Anderson came up to collect me from the training ground, took me back to meet the chairman, and I was duly informed of what had happened, and then offered the role.
Oh, okay, well, he obviously took it. Now, there was a famous match at Orient, and I think you were involved, weren't you, where Orient, where Darlington were 3-1 up, and ended up losing 4-3.
Yeah, I played in that game. I think, if I remember rightly, Alan Comfort had a spell where he absolutely ripped us apart for a little bit, and yeah, they did. I think, I'm trying to think who scored the winner, whether it was somebody like Paul Shinners or somebody like that, but yeah, that was it was a very end-to-end exciting game. I think it was an evening game, that Friday night.
It was, yeah. It was an evening match. What night? I can't remember. It's that long ago. But it was in black and white. No, it was a long time ago. Yeah, but it was one of those memorable matches. But then you got the move. How did it come about then, the move to Orient from Darlington?
Funnily enough, I mean, I was at a North East Writers dinner up in Durham, and Frank Clark was up there as a guest on one of the tables. I was sat at a table adjacent to him with a reporter who used to work for the Weekly News, and just as a throwaway comment, John Fotheringham leant back and said to Frank, if you're looking for players for next season and you want to strengthen, I've got one here who'd probably help you in your cause and could possibly help you get promoted. Never thought anything more of it, and finished the season, went away at the end of season, went and visited family out in Florida for 6 weeks. Got the call while I was out there from my dad to say when I landed back in London I had to speak to Frank and speak to Ray Lewington at Fulham.
You sure that wasn't an illegal approach?
It may well have been. Yeah, I think there's a few beers had passed between them as well. But yeah, that's how it came about, really. And I got the call, went to speak to Ray Lewington first when I got back. He was aware that, obviously, Frank had shown an interest at Orient. So I said to him, look, you know, I've had a chat with you. I'll go and speak to Frank tomorrow and I'll make my decision. Went across to Brisbane Road to meet Frank the following day. I think that was probably around about, I don't know, maybe it's on the Saturday or Sunday. And during the conversation, Frank had informed me that he needed a decision pronto as he was taking the squad out to Portugal for 10 days. So I just immediately decided not to unpack my bags and just said, where do I sign? That's how it happened.
The holiday did it, didn't it? That swung it. But I mean,
it did help.
You actually, I mean, you played over 30 games that season, and that was the promotion season. So, were there any players that you felt stood out for you individually, playing either, you know, in front of them or behind them or whatever, that stood out for you as really strong players for the club?
Well, I mean, the obvious one is Alan. You know, Alan Comfort was a pleasure, and, you know, with all due respect, I mean, the type of player I am, I wasn't somebody who was going to get the ball, take five players on, stick one in the top corner. Basically, I tried to make a career out of being a little bit of a hod carrier, mixing it up a little bit, keeping it very simple, and just supplying the players who could go and win your games, and Alan was certainly one of them. You know, he demanded the ball for 90 minutes. He was a pleasure to play with. Obviously, we had the likes of Ian Duryeff up front, who knew where the goal was. And then, obviously, later on in that promotion-winning season, Frank pulled the card, the ace trump card, and brought Kevin Campbell in.
That did make a difference.
The one thing I'll say, though, Andy, to be truthful, you know, it's probably unfair to pick individuals out of that side. If I could say anything about it, and it is easy once, you know, when you've had a bit of success, it does sort of make it a lot sweeter. But what I would say about that side is from front to back, it had leadership. You know, you've got Kevin Hales with his experience and a captain material, John Sitton captain material, Keith Day, you know, Steve Castle, who came back from injury and got back into the side, Terry Howard. You know, you're talking about some real leadership and some real characters. And, you know, you could wax lyrical about them all, really. It was just a pleasure to play in, and a great bunch of lads, great club at the time. And I've gone on record many, many times of saying it was the most enjoyable time in football I ever had.
That's nice to hear. I mean, you moved on later that year to Scunthorpe, where you had over 50 appearances, and then off to Lincoln and a terrible injury.
Yeah. I mean, I was only 28 and I was, you know, feeling good, feeling fit, playing some decent football and having a little bit of interest shown from a couple of teams higher up in the league. I know Stan Turnant had shown some interest in taking me to Burnley. And really, when you look at the challenges that you go into during your career and some of the times where you think you could have been really hurt, the one that finished me wasn't even really a challenge. I had a shot at goal and a kid came to close me down, turned his back on me. If he'd come to challenge me, I'd probably still been playing until I was 35. But he turned his back on me, and on the follow-through, my leg wrapped around his waist, and the knee hyperextended. Lateral ligaments, anterior cruciate, cartilage, you name it. It was like a car crash, really, and that was it, me done.
It's a sad way to end it, Paul. But you started a gym, didn't you, and a health club, and you've got involved in, or stayed involved in football, and currently you're assistant at Staveley Football Club.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. We're a Step 5, North East Counties Premier. We're a Step 5 side, just based between Chesterfield and Sheffield. Not far, obviously, from where Ady was. I mean, I briefly saw Ady when he was there with Martin Allen when they were at Chesterfield. Our chairman sponsored Captain's Day down there, and we went down, and I managed to have a 5 minutes with Ady there. But, you know, it's a great setup, great club. The chairman's doing wonders with it. At this moment in time, it's going through a massive transition with big investment put in. 3G down, state-of-the-art 3G, totally transforming the whole stadium, really, to enhance it for the community.
Yeah, but what's the effect of this COVID having on Staveley?
It's kind of hard to gauge in one sense at this moment in time with the home games, because obviously we're not allowed to play any just yet. I think the first home game is going to be scheduled for the 7th of November. The reality is, Andy, I've been listening to the show, and you know, the theme coming through is confusion, it's lack of consistency, no clear guidance of what's going on. Do you know what? The reality is, it probably won't affect us too much once we get started, because remarkably, and you've got to ask yourself, what are these people thinking? What are the FA thinking? What are the government thinking? How do they consider people at our level? Because apparently it's safe for 300 people to come in our ground and watch a game of football. Step 4, it's safe enough for 400 people. You know, step 3, it's safe enough for 600 people. Alfreton, at step 2, Conference North, whose average gate is around about 600, can't have any of
them. I know, it's just... Yeah,
I just don't get it.
We said about it earlier, I don't know if you heard what Dave said, you know, with the Wealdstone and I think at Dartford as well, where 40 people could watch it from the bar, but they had to have the windows blacked out overlooking the pitch. So
it's just logic. Logic at its best, isn't it?
And of course...
You know, you do despair. I mean, we went through...
Go on, sorry. No, cool, carry on.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously during the pre-season campaign, when it was first out, you know, everybody was getting a little bit giddy about the Premier League starting and, oh, that's it, then football's back. And, you know, this was before any social distancing had even been removed or, you know, and you think to yourself, well, how can, at Premier League level for me, social distancing was still in place, but they were spending thousands on testing. You know, what they were doing, sanitising the stadium, sanitising balls, the money they spend, it's big business with the Premier League, as we all know. So that's fair enough, but clubs at our level are not going to be spending that amount of money on testing. Yet suddenly we're told social distancing is still in place, yet we can now throw 30 lads together on a training session, and then we can go and play a match against another team and throw 30 lads into a contact sport, and yet we've still got social distancing.
Yep.
And you're thinking, well, where is this going?
Yeah, it's a massive contradiction, isn't it? And we're all as confused as each other, I think.
We played somebody in the FA Vars the other day from the Blackburn region. We played AFC Darwin, and Darwin went on complete lock. It came into the press around about the Wednesday afternoon. Darwin is red flagged. It's going on lockdown. So we automatically thought, well, this game's not going to go ahead then. By the Saturday, our secretary contacted the FA, didn't get any real clear guidance, contacted Darwin's secretary, and as far as the Darwin secretary was concerned, the government had suddenly then changed their mind and decided they weren't going to shut Darwin down until the Tuesday, so the game could go ahead on the Saturday. Hang on a sec, when's this COVID going to take effect then? Is it having a weekend off? You can't catch it over the weekend now. But on Tuesday, you're going to be able to catch it, so we'll shut you down on Tuesday.
Oh, dearie, dearie me.
Yeah, and we ended up playing the game. But, you know, we've been exposed to 30 lads coming over from an area which has been on 2-week lockdown.
Crazy.
And you just think, well, where's it going?
Well, I felt, Paul, that the whole of football could have done with a fortnight, you know, lockdown. Literally no training, no meeting, you know, of players. Have a 2-week break, and then if after that, by rights, everybody should be in the clear and they can all come back and play, hopefully, a period of matches without interruption.
The problem you've got, Andy, as I see it, whether you shut the country down for another 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, when you bring it back out and then you start opening things up again, what are they expecting? Are they expecting this virus to have upped it and gone, oh, everybody's staying in so we can't infect anybody else? The reality is this virus is not going away. So all you're doing really by putting people on lockdown, as far as I'm concerned, is parking it. You're parking it for a period. And then when you come back out of lockdown, you're re-exposing people to it and people are going to catch it.
I've got to tell you, you've got a lot of nodding heads in this studio when you said that.
For me, the herd mentality of again, listening to the show, you know, the recent ones are saying, listen, one death is too many. But I think, I'm not sure whether it was Dave who said, you know, the ones who were unfortunately getting this virus and actually, you know, creating more fatalities are the ones with pre-existing conditions. You know, we've had 2 or 3 go down at our club within the last month. We've actually been vigilant and done what Orient did. We actually pulled fixtures, stopped fixtures. I'm not sure every club, and this might be the cynical side of me coming out, but I'm not sure every club will be as honourable, especially if there's FA Cup money at stake.
Well, we know what Hull City did when offered a test, don't we? But there you go. That's another story. Yeah. Paul, we're going to have to bail you out. It's been lovely to speak to you again, and hopefully we'll catch up with you in the not too distant. Hopefully there's a chance for a Christmas meet-up for the promotion squad, and if there aren't restrictions in place.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that we've mentioned, Andy, and obviously, you know, this has got in the way of that. You know, obviously we've all been on our little WhatsApp group getting Terry Howard to organise something, but, you know, at this moment in time he's not able to. But like you say, it would be nice to get together in the not too distant future, and hopefully I can come and take in a game at Brisbane Road as well.
Paul, I wouldn't go anywhere near your group, because that was exactly the same when you had your changing room in that promotion year. It was so tight in it, I was so scared to go in it because I was an apprentice. I had to do all the kit. I'd get in an hour early to do the kit, because if I got anything wrong, I was going to get absolutely caned by the players.
Lovely. Paul, we'll catch you later, mate. Take care.
Andy, cheers. AD,
good. See you, mate. Good luck to you, mate. Stay safe.
Yeah.
Tell her, Paul.
And you'll stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was Paul Ward there. Nice to catch up with him. Now, we were talking briefly earlier about, before we went on, about the FA, the League Cup tie with Tottenham obviously not taking place because of the COVID test proving positive on so many people. And we cast our mind back to when Orient last played in the League Cup against Tottenham. They drew them in the Cup in 85. They beat them 2-0 at home before a 4-0 defeat in the second leg. And one player who was playing in that and remembers it well was Kevin Hales. And I spoke to Kevin earlier on today. So joining us on the Orient Hour tonight, a former captain of Leighton Orient and a crowd favourite too, it's Kevin Hales. How are you, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, Andy. How's things there?
Yeah, very good. We're all recovering from all the total shocks we keep getting and ups and downs with Orient and the COVID situation, etc. And, of course, the massive disappointment that the tie against Tottenham won't be played and was given to Tottenham by default. And, you know, it was a great chance, and you'd know only too well, for players at a lower level to pit themselves against so-called, you know, top-level players.
Yeah, and obviously the opportunity of maybe going on again, and who came out after that? You know, Chelsea. So, it must be really, really disappointing for them. I look at it on the other side as well. I also look at it from a club point of view. Would have been a massive bumper pay package for them. But, you know, but unfortunately it didn't happen, and we're in this strange world at the moment, and, you know... things happen that no one's expecting, and you know, unfortunately, the COVID situation hit the Orient players, and obviously scuppered that.
Yeah, because I mean, people say, oh, they've got wealthy owners; they can ride it. But they're forecasting a £2.5 million loss, which in no way did they sign up for that when they took over the club. You know, there's no way they could have known that, and it's way outside the remit of losses that you thought would be capable losses and you can cope with. It's far bigger than that now, isn't it?
Andy, every week now I pick up the paper and I'm looking for another, you know, Mansfield scenario and thinking, you know, how are these smaller clubs and the lower league clubs, how are they going to survive? I thought to myself, you know, somewhere along when all the Sky started with the big money and stuff like that, and I'm thinking, listen, somewhere along the line, the football bubble has got to burst. But, you know, I wasn't thinking that, you know, that it would happen because of COVID and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's really desperate times for everybody. And listen, we all talk about the FA Cup. We all talk about the League Cup. We all talk about playing Premier League teams and getting that opportunity, not only to get the money in, but to play at some of these big grounds and pitch yourself against, you know, some of these top players. So, yeah, it's really disappointing all round for the club and players.
Well, because it's what you dream of as a boy growing up, playing football in the park and at school. You dream of being able to go out there in a big stadium and have a go at these big teams. I mean, it's a chance that's been taken away from the players. But let's cast our mind back to a certain evening back in 1985 when, against all the odds, and a star-studded Tottenham Hotspur side that included people like Osvaldo Ediles and Glenn Hoddle, amongst others. Orient, who had been on a shocking run in the previous three matches, really. They'd lost at Halifax, scraped a draw with Mansfield, and lost at home on the weekend to Colchester United. And there they were, I think it was a Monday evening, facing Tottenham Hotspur in the League Cup. Now, I don't think the match was ever filmed, Kev, was it?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I mean, you know, you're casting yourself back to those sort of days, and obviously they're the sort of games you want to play in, and they're the games that you always remember. And, you know, I've got fond memories of that particular game and also the replay, you know, which was a bit unfortunate, but no doubt you want to talk about that as well. But, yeah, the home fixture, big crowd. Big players, Glenn Hoddle, Osvaldo Ediles, you know, you don't come across them every week. And not only big stars, but big international stars, you know, as well. So, really enjoyable evening. And probably, you know, Kevin Godfrey's come out with two goals and you know, two terrific goals as well. And we've come off the back with a win and we move forward to the next round but the next leg and see what we can do at White Hart Lane. But yeah, what a great evening.
It was a good evening. And I mean, mental preparation wise, do you think you were perhaps a little bit better off? I mean, people like yourself were at a bigger club in Chelsea up until about 24 months beforehand. So, you know, do you think that because you were at a bigger club, you weren't quite as phased or, you know, you were, you know, not unsettled by the opposition at all?
Listen, when the team sheet comes in and you've got all those names down there, Andy, somewhere along the line, it's got to put a bit of nervousness in you, you know, because these are top players. And listen, with that, with the nerves, you get that little bit of adrenaline. And there's only one thing that can come out of this. If a win comes out of it, it's unbelievable. If a loss comes out of it, well, that's what was expected. And especially, no doubt, after the beginning of the season, when obviously we didn't do very well at all. So it probably came at a great time for the football club because it was a no-win situation. So could only get something good out of it.
Yeah, so I mean, that first half, I think it ended goalless, didn't it, with Spurs probably having the better of the play. But the second half was just a totally different match, and Orient really took the game to Tottenham and, as you say, got their just result, the just desserts, really, and just a reward, even. And it could have been worse for Tottenham because, if I remember rightly, Paul Shinner's missed pretty much a sitter right at the death there for 3-0.
Yeah, I think also when you're a lower league player and all the Orient supporters know how sort of up and at them and you've got to be tight and there's a lot of running around and closing down and stuff like that. When you play against a Premier League club, they give you that little bit of more space. And I think we had a group of players there that could have and use that space and timing on the ball better than maybe some other lower league clubs. And we made good use of it. And yeah, poor old Shins at the end there would have made it a much better present with us going to White Hart Lane with three goals in the bag rather than the two. But
it made a game of it, didn't it? It gave you a realistic chance of doing something because you were kicking off 2-0 up in effect. But what it did do for the morale of the club, I mean, you think we came in on the back of 1 point from nine. Then we went and we got a 3-1 win, a 5-0 at Rochdale, a 3-0 against Scunthorpe, a draw with Exeter, we won again 2-1, and then a draw with Aldershot before we lost 1-0 on the weekend to Stockport, and then of course the Broadwater Farm riots, for people who wouldn't know, had happened just after the initial tie, and Spurs delayed the match, I think, for several weeks. And by the time they played that second leg, Kev, they had a full squad back from injury, and we survived. And it's one of those weird things. I remember looking up at a clock as we'd been turned down a penalty, as far as I'm concerned, a stonewall penalty for Chris Jones, which if converted, would have made it 1-0 on the night. And then they had a free kick, and it came through a crowd of players, and Graham Roberts, and it crept in the corner, bottom corner, and I looked at the clock, and it said 44 minutes, 6 seconds, and you thought, God, 54 more seconds we would have got in at half-time, and the crowd were on their back, and everything was set up. I thought, if you'd got in at half-time, I think you'd have got over the line.
Yeah, there were a lot of circumstances going on while we picked up in the league. Listen, everybody wanted to play in that second leg, and we wasn't knowing when that was going to happen. So, players, listen, mentally and physically get themselves up because they want to be picked for that next second leg to play at Tottenham at White Hart Lane. So that obviously paid dividends for the football club and the way we got results after that. But listen, when you go to White Hart Lane, and to be fair, Peter Shreves, the manager at the time, paid some glowing tributes to the football club and to the players after the first leg. So that was nice, and going in there. And yeah, listen, 50 seconds away from going in 0-0, but always a turning point for me, I don't know if you remember it, Andy, was an absolute crunching tackle by Graham Roberts on Colin Foster. Colin Foster, a young player for us who was destined for bigger things and did go on to bigger things. But I remember Graham Roberts came through him as if he was going through like a train. And obviously that disrupted us and got them going. And, once they got one, it was always going to be difficult at a place like that. And like you say, with their team being at full strength, it was a tough outcome in the end.
It was, but it still gave us a great memories from that first leg, Kev, and all I can do is wish you well, and hopefully we'll catch up with you later this season on the Orient Hour, and thanks for your memories of that cup tie.
No problem. Good luck, Andy.
Cheers, Kevin. Bye-bye. That was nice to catch up, wasn't it, with Kevin Hales, and he was a classy act, wasn't he, Halesy?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously from the era of Paul Ward, and... obviously, subject to being allowed back into the grounds, I've had the company of Kevin when I've been up to Orient watching games, and he hasn't changed one little bit. He's still the same person, cheeky chappy, and always good value for a bit of fun.
Yeah, and I think he's a very caring person. I mean, he sent me a very nice message when I was no longer being used as the club commentator, and also he got in touch on the weekend when Simon Feldman went missing, and Simon's got memory problems, of course, and the club and his family put out an appeal, and he was eventually, thank goodness, found at the services at Newport Pagnell by the police, and safe and well, and very well. But for an ex-captain from many years ago to actually get in touch again and etc., and he's offered his help for other people as well, I think he's a classy act. Now, we've had a couple of questions come in aimed mainly at Adrian. I think Hedman's header on the message board, you played centre half next to Paul Beasley. Could you tell he was going to be at the club only a little while and that bigger clubs would be in for him?
Yeah, and I think there was a name just mentioned there in Colin Foster when I was obviously coming through the ranks at Orient. I wouldn't say similar players. I mean, obviously Paul was left-footed and gave good balance in playing alongside him. He was a very, very good talker and he was very calm on the ball. So, you could see the similarities between himself and Colin. And, Colin was a player that I looked up to because obviously before turning pro, he was a centre-back. Very calm on the ball and knew how to defend. And Paul was of the same ilk. And I think you can always tell. I think even supporters watching players can sort of see that players that have got ability and are leaders, which Paul was, would go on to bigger and better things.
Now, Fish on the message board. If the season is soon abandoned, how many of the 92 clubs will still be here for next season? Well, we've not got a crystal ball. I don't know if there will actually be too many that actually go, but there might be quite a few. Maybe, Adrian, we'll have to go to looking at being maybe part-time.
I think so. I think there's so much uncertainty at the moment. I don't think anybody knows, you know, of the 92. I think you've probably got to look at probably lower level, League 2, maybe some League 1 teams. I think the Championship and Premier League speak for themselves, but most definitely probably...
Well, there are meetings this week, sorry, as we're meeting to discuss helping the lower leagues by the Premier League clubs. I mean, there's things have been discussed, but I don't think anything's been sorted out yet, has it?
No, I think the point to it is that, of course, we all know there's an awful lot of money around the Premier League, but those clubs have got to take care of themselves as well with what they've got in place. So there's an effect all round, isn't there, for everybody, you know, and it's very hard to say what they should be giving.
There's a massive imbalance, we all know that, don't we? It's just whether they're going to, anything's going to be put in place.
The whole thing, yeah, I mean, they coughed up $5 million for Scudamore, didn't they, when he decided to
money well spent.
Leave his job, yeah. But I mean, they have got a duty of care. They've got people tied in knots with this, the amount of compensation they have to pay if they take a younger player is a farce, and it's a very much a one-way trick, isn't it, in their favour, and I think things have got to change, otherwise you're going to have a bloodbath out there.
Well, I mean, I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, common sense, doesn't it, really, let's be honest. You know, when obviously Paul's talking about, you know, fans being loud in at the lower level, and funny enough, obviously I know there was a pre-season friendly between Bishop Stortford and Leighton Orient, and it looked like there was no social distancing in place whatsoever. No. So you can't tell me, subject to what the capacity of a stadium is, there is a way of getting supporters in, especially being outside as well, to watch a game if you can use common sense. Now, we all know that after people sometimes generally do have a drink, the common sense goes out the window. But the bottom line is, I think it can be achieved and it should be achieved.
Thanks, Adrian. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Barry, for being here. And we'll see you next week, folks.